wolf on the hill is never as hungry as the wolf climbing the hill.
Lone wolf is a term commonly used by many people. It means that they used to belong to a group, but left, to become stronger. By thinking and acting alone, the lone wolf acquires superior cunning, agility, imagination and skills unknown to members of the pack. The lone wolf is independent of and distances itself from the petty bickerings, expectations, demands, mediocrities and unfulfilled dreams of other people, groups or organizations. The lone wolf is often branded as the rebel.
For it is the sovereign lone wolf who stands alone in all of his or her glory.
I was beginning to wonder where I was supposed to surrender there for a while. Well, I thank Eric Levy, the entire National Alliance membership, for an invitation of being here once more. Greeting you from the Mexical new state, California. I guess we're called the unwashed regulars out there because we're already behind Mexican lines. They've moved the border. A lot of people don't seem to realize that, at least 50 miles north, and that's north of where I live. I'll tell you, one problem I have this time of the year, especially in the middle of about April, I have this neurological affliction that starts taking place on me, and it starts something like this. And I have to do this. And it's only till about the end of the month. And if you have any doctors in Cleveland that can explain this strange thing to me, I'd appreciate it. There was a Jewish doctor, I think in La Jolla Medical Center, that came up with a new idea that he could raise the IQ of anyone with an electronic machine simply by putting a helmet on their head with the electronic devices, and he could computerize and raise their IQ. So the black man came in and he says, I am tired of my 50 IQ. I want to raise my IQ. The doctor said, now, are you sure you want to do this? He says, yeah. So he says, you get in the chair, they put the helmet on him, they hooked up all the wires, and they pushed a button. And up it goes, 50, 51, 52, 50. It gets up to about 150, they take it off. How do you feel? Oh, I feel great. I'm thinking of all these great things I can create. This is terrific. And so he leaves the office. 2 weeks later, he comes back and he says, Doctor, I hate to say this, but I want you to take me back to where I was. I went back to my neighborhood. No one would have anything to do with me. All my friends have left me. They think I'm a smartass. So could you take me back down to 50? The doctor says, well, if that's your decision, I'll go along with it. So on goes the helmet again and hit the negative button and it starts going down. Gets down around 100, and there's a big crash outside in the street. Cars got in a wreck, and there's people laying all over the street. The doctor and a nurse run out. They're administering the poor people laying bleeding in the street, and they forget about Washington Brown in here. So after a while, they say, oh my God, Mr. Brown is still in that machine. And they run back in, and they look at the dial, and it says zero. and they whip the helmet off the black man and say, "Mr. Brown, are you okay? How do you feel?" And he said, "Si, bueno." Some of the black people out there in California, because they're all going back south. They're being run out by the Mexicans, or the mestizos is a term you should use. You know, I interject something a lot of conservatives don't care too much for when I talk about our problem. Our problem goes back a long, long, long time ago to Europe when we were under the kings and so forth. And when the kings were making deals with the Jews against us white serfs all the time, every once in a while us downtrodden, unwashed would rise up and kick the ass of the Jews. And the kings, they let us do it for a while as a message to the Jews, and then they send the army out to stop it because they always needed the Jews. And who has been screwed all down through time by the elite of your race has been shafting you, and it is a class issue. And that's where we have a problem in this country. The super rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And we're being driven down to the position of the Negro. And we're being dumbed down by education that is designed to bring us to that point. What do they do every time they needed a war and all those crazy religious wars in Europe? We had to go out and throw ourselves on the petard for a pope or a preacher or a king or whoever it was and continue to get screwed until a lot of us decided to come over here to this new place, North America, where there's a lot of wide open spaces, get away from those bastards. So, and also, white slavery in Europe was rampant. For hundreds of years, white slavery was rampant. It was only the intercession of the church, I give them that credit, where they outlawed slavery of white people. So then the Jews who were running the slave trade then primarily moved out into other areas to go after the blacks and make them slaves. And of course, we should know that a tremendous number of white people, working people, the lumpkin proletariat, as Marx called us, we had a big problem and we didn't have anybody really fighting for us. And we were slaves, many of us. Large percentages of whites came to this country were slaves. You call it indentured servants, bullshit. It was slavery. And there's plenty of information available on that. So my conclusion on a lot of this is all wars are a racket, and all wars do not serve the white race. No war has served the white race except the elimination of the American Indian. That was the one great racial war we had. We suppressed the Indians, and had it been for the church, we'd either exterminated them all or driven them into Mexico. All the rest of these wars, like the great General Smedley Butler said, were rackets where 1 million white men died in the fields of France for 5 miles of territory. 9 million white working people died in the First World War. And millions more died in the Second World War. And every time we're in these wars, white people lose. Not only on the battlefield, in the First World War, the troops came back, and what did they have? They brought the blacks up from the South to take their jobs. And the only way they could get any redress is have the biggest riots this country's ever seen in Detroit and other places. And at one time, I want to tell you, the racial movement in this country was working class. It was populist. It wasn't elitist, because the elitists will use racism to protect their capital. But they're not serious about it. They don't care anything about the bottom of the pyramid, just the peak. And so, I look at things from that point of view, because to me, the evidence is there. Remember the draft riots in the Civil War? What did we gain out of the Civil War? What was it fought for? 90% of the wealth in the South was owned by 1% of the people. 90% of that wealth was banked in northern banks. And of the sons and daughters of the elitist planters in the South that were marrying the sons and daughters of the bankers in the North. What did our race gain out of all of that? Slavery. They asked me on TV shows what we've done about slavery. There would not have been one black person ever enter North America if I'd have been in trouble. There wouldn't be any discussions about their riots because they wouldn't be here. We would have blasted those slave ships out of the water or given them off where they couldn't refuse to go back. I can't understand blacks. We're mean. We're cruel. We're white. We are what they say in many cases, and we're going to get that way again. But why do they follow us around? If we're so horrible, why do they follow us everywhere we go? You can't get rid of them. Well, I've lived 1 mile from the largest Marine base in the world, Camp Pendleton. I can walk over there. I've lived there for 30 years. I was there during the Vietnam War, and I started out supporting the war because I was a right-wing conservative, which I'm no longer anymore. I have no use for right-wing conservatism. You call me a radical, you call me a racial separatist, you call me a revolutionist, but don't insult me and call me a conservative. I spent years in that playpen, and nothing ever happened. So I see my friends start coming back in body bags. And pretty soon I turned against that war, and I refused to pay my income taxes. And I marched out there and picketed too. We really screwed up in that Vietnam War. We should always oppose these imperialist type wars. I opposed intervention in Central America. You know, all the right-wingers said Metzger's lost his mind. I'd say we don't belong in Nicaragua. We don't belong in these places. This country was never, never set up to be the policeman of the world. It is not a constitutional country anymore, run by constitution and war powers. It's run by treaty, and we're nothing. The military is used for nothing but goon squads to keep the transnational corporations in power, and the left wing is right when they say that. In fact, I get a lot of my good stuff from the left, and I'm doing better recruiting in the left, adding racism to an economically wise leftist, than I ever did in the right wing. The young guys, the leftists, the anarchists, these kind of people are listening. They haven't had all those years of playpen politics. So I began to change my attitude, and I found out my government was my enemy. The men on Wall Street were my enemy. The transnational corporations were my enemy. And anytime anyone gave them an offer they couldn't refuse, I was quite thrilled. World War II, of course, was a major total disaster. You can revise it. You can talk about all you want to, but it was the worst disaster that ever happened to the white race. And I fault everybody that allowed themselves to be drawn into it. We have never recovered from World War II, and I don't know whether we ever will. Our race has really, really suffered. But still, we support nationalism. Let's go get them. You hear that all the time. Let's go get them. I want to go get them here. I don't need to go anywhere else. I was the first, when I was still called a right-winger, to say we should not have wars with Russia. Millions of white people live in Russia. If we have an atomic war, we're going to wipe out the entire ancestral homelands of the white race. We got to be crazy. So I said, we got to knock this Cold War off. I sort of became a bad boy among the races, or the right wing, and so I had to leave. They said they kicked me out. But they lost me. The labor struggle in this country has been racial. They asked me on the radio, they say, "Are you a white supremacist?" I said, "Of course not. I don't have enough money to be a white supremacist. I'm a white separatist. A white working man just wants to get them away from him. He don't want a slave. He don't want them cooking in his kitchen. He don't want his kids sucking on their titties. He wants away from them. It's the rich man that wants that." Well, my heroes have changed. I think the whole thing changed about the time of the order, British Wagon, and Robert J. Matthews. Once we hit that point, all the rest was over. All the rest was over. It reminds me, a lot of the groups running around and their leaders, reminds me of a French story about the revolution, when Frenchmen were standing in their little house, their little apartment, and they have these windows that are about this high up to their waist. You look out on the street, and all of a sudden they saw hundreds of people with swords and forks and knives and everything running down the street this way. And the one turned to the other and he says, "What's happening?" He says, "Well, I don't know." So pretty soon here comes Jacques, their other friend. He's a block running behind him. And he says, Jacques, where are you going? Why are you running so fast?" He says, "I'm trying to catch up to my followers." You know, in Germany, it's against the law for the right and left to come together against the system. Isn't that a clue? It's against, there's a law in Germany that the left and the right cannot come together against the system. And that's the secret. Many of the left have the economic thing down pretty pat. And many of the right have the racial thing down quite pretty good. Got to bring these people together as best we can. And I think what you're looking for is a poster child type that you want it to be, but it's not going to be the way you want it to be. Any more than the people understood in the latter part of the 19th century what was coming in the 20th century. They didn't know what was coming. They had a few clues, and some of the thinkers did. But you couldn't have predicted, and we cannot predict, even I, what's ahead of us now. But I know one thing, Thomas Chittum is right. This country is going to balkanize, and there's going to be hell to pay. And either the white man is going to lay down and die, which he may very well be doing, and there's nothing I can do to stop him if he decides to do that, or he's going to fight. And one way of fighting is we got to get beyond this guilt thing. Every time a white man does something that we think is not quite, as the Jews would say, kosher, we condemn him. When the order struck out and did what they did, "Oh, well, geez, we can't have those kind of people. They believed in politics of the deed. We believe in politics of the talking." When many of these men, James Huberty, was a racist. He was from Ohio. He went down to San Diego. He couldn't get a job. All the Mexicans had the job. He finally was in a mental state. He tried to check into a mental facility, a self-help thing there, and they wouldn't let him in. It was all minority. So what did James do? Well, he didn't write a letter to the paper. He picked up his gun, went down to McDonald's, and blew every Mexican he saw away. You know, I'm not going to condemn it anymore. And the reason for that is, do you ever hear the black leadership condemn one thing blacks do? I never hear the mestizos condemning one thing they do. So when Joseph Paul Franklin wipes out 35 people, don't come to me crying, "I didn't make this system the way it is." I think Hunter was the best book ever to come out of National Alliance. I recommend it. So, anyhow, we talk a lot about the problems of the past, but I think we got to get our minds straight on the class, sort of a class struggle here economically. I hear people say, we got to go to the rich, we got to go to the generals and recruit them. Sorry, boys, you know how they got there? They got there by screwing you. You think they're going to risk everything they got to help? Look, I know three generals in my town, including a four-star general, Twining, that I have known for years. And I have sat in his home. And I said, you know, we need help, man. What are you going to do? Can you do something? Oh, I might lose my retirement. What happens to military men when they're brave and can charge a machine gun nest or anything when they're over there, but when they come back here, most of them turn into jellyfish? You assume that they come back and these guys, they wouldn't take anything. But all the mestizos can move in their block, they can have drive-bys, everything else. They say, oh, I don't want to get involved. I said, damn, you know more ways to kill anybody than I could ever think of. You don't do anything. It's the disaffected people that will begin and work with this thing. It is the people, the throwaway kids. It's all this stuff that's simmering now, every day, all this stuff. Colorado thing, oh, well. Southern Indiana, shooting away. Well, we didn't create this, but I'm not going to condemn it anymore, because the more destabilization this Iron Heel sees, the faster it's going to deteriorate. And I am for the absolute deterioration of the system in Washington. Seditionist, and if that's the way it is, I'll accept it. Fine. That's my own opinion, Doctor. I'm not trying to saddle you with that. So, all the institutions have been undermined. And don't tell me your churches are undermined. Every institution you have has been undermined and taken over. Everyone. And if you support them in any way, you're consorting with the enemy, as far as I'm concerned. Voting? If voting would change things, they'd make it illegal. The party system? Gang A, gang B. All you're doing is voting for the gang that's going to shaft you, you hope, the least. You know they're going to rob you, but you're going to say, well, I'll take the one that's going to do it the least. We'll prolong this agony. Well, I'm 61 years old. I don't want to prolong the agony. I want to get this thing on the road. I don't want to try to run this thing from an old folks' home. Voting. I'll tell you, the only time that the political process can work for you is when you have an armed backup. See, I don't care what you think of the IRA. You had Sinn Féin, small party, strong arm. If you want what you want, you gotta use it, the strong arm. You can run candidates till hell freezes over, but if they don't have the power and they don't have $50 million, they don't have a chance. Even if they get in, you get nothing. They'll have to water themselves down so badly, forget it. So any guy that thinks he can do it politically without an armed resistance, and I ain't talking about Boy Scouts, I'm talking about armed resistance, if you think you can do it, forget it. You're wasting your money. You're wasting your time. You're fooling yourself. You're back in the playpen. Picketing? I think that's an insult to our intelligence. I'm not going to picket them. Somebody said, what is it? Picket the recruiters? I think I would rather burn the recruiters than picket them. other thing. If you think you're going to be this underground stuff, this underground military kind of stuff, and you're going to big meetings and putting your face and making speeches and stuff, give me a break. That's about as underground as being on nightly TV. The people that are really doing it and going to do it in this country, you don't know. You've never met them. They never went to a meeting, and they ain't going to go to a meeting. You're just going to read about them in the newspaper one of these days. Boom! Where's Eric Rudolph? They can't find him. You know what I said out there? I said, I know why. He didn't go to meetings. He didn't join a membership group, or at least he got away from it. He just cut himself totally loose, and now he's got a chance. And he don't go back to his old buddies and say, will you hide me? First place they look. So, people say, well, I don't think this leaderless resistance works. Well, all I can say is I see a lot of people doing it, and it's worked quite well. What about the tri-state boys up there in Nevada that had the big shootout? What happened? They ain't got him. They haven't got Rudolph. They haven't got one of the guys in Texas. They're still out there. I think we have a need for all kinds of groups, but when it comes down to the heavy-duty action, it's going to take people who haven't been maybe watered down too much. They say, well, you know, I believe in politics of the deed. You know, like the old, I believe what the anarchists used to say, the politics of the deed. Because we see in pictures, we think in pictures, and so when we use words, we have to go through that wasted time of converting words to a picture. How many pictures, how many words do you need when you saw the Murrah building in rubble? That was 10 zillion words in about 3 hours. And so the act is perfect communication. Perfect communication. You don't need to write anything about it. You say, well, there it is. It happened. Boom. Okay. So in conclusion, and I've enjoyed the speakers today, and I'll take some of the videotape back to California out there where we're dug in. I had a big mestizo family move in next door to me. We had a pretty much all white block, and they're going, it's a block, it's a house by house thing, just like the millet they're taking. And the real estate people and the banks are in on it. Your good buddy, the Republican, down at the bank. So they're next door there, and it's not too noisy. They got 3 families in there now. Now all of a sudden, okay, here comes the music. 9 million dB. And that was last week. So here's the way I operate without going to jail. I go in and get my 500 watt amplifier, and I put it out on the lawn, and I crank up my German march music and a few Hitler speeches. And just in case they didn't get the point, I put the swastika flag out there too. Welcome to our multi-ethnic neighborhood. You want multi-ethnic? That's multi-ethnic. Well, they turned off the music in about 20 minutes and they haven't turned it back on since. Once a man said in a film, he said, it's judgment that defeats us. So let's quit passing judgment on people who decide what they're going to do and go and carry it out. You may not agree with how they did it. You may not agree with the tactics. You may not agree a lot. You probably wouldn't do it yourself. But don't give them a bad rap. And if they go to prison, write them in prison. Our side don't even visit people in prison. Very few. We do. I know we do it all the time. But what do you think? How do you think you're going to have a revolutionary movement to take back the country when a good racist goes to prison? Nobody even goes to visit him. Boy, the blacks do. They're in there. The Mexicans are in there. Mestizos, Asian, Jews, whatever. They're in there visiting their people. if you don't pick up your wounded, most of you don't even know where the great martyrs of our race are buried in this country. They die, they're buried, people don't even go to their grave, they don't even know where they're at. And you expect people to die for you, for this country? Well, number one, forget the Constitution. That's all over. That is done. It's over. It's done. It's not going to be revived. It's over. We're not looking into the past. What's coming in the future is going to be either totally new, we're going to build up our Aryan state, or we're going to be out of here. Period. But don't expect to put the old Bill of Rights and all that, because we're going to go through hell. We're going to go through blood, sweat, and tears to get what we want. And I hope you're with me, and I hope we get all out of the playpen. Thank you. A few questions. Yeah, sure. I know you had a time problem here. Any questions? If I haven't offended someone, I want you to come up to me afterwards and I'll figure a way of offending you. I usually try to offend everyone, class, religion, you name it. Yes.
Pastor, this much I can promise you, because I can see the future. If we don't win, we'll make sure nobody wins.
Absolutely, and I told them in the Southwest, I said, we can shut off the water. If the water stops, development stops. Scorched earth, because if we are going to lose, there's going to be nothing left for them. Yes. Well, I hate to bring this up to you, but most military and most times have gotten drunk. And some of the best. You remember when, I know I did a lot of it, but I know that when President Lincoln was complained to him that Grant drank too damn much and they shouldn't have him as a general, Lincoln said, he's winning battles, isn't he? And they said, yeah. They said, well, see to it he gets a case of whiskey every morning. I tell military people, you got to use common sense. If you're going to work for us or yourself, because I consider each person an individual agent, self-contained, that once you have the ideology straight, you can go into anything and be an effective person for our side. So we tell them, you go in the military, keep your mouth shut. Don't tell them what you think. Don't have any literature around. Don't play any of these games. Don't go to rallies. Don't do that. Dig in. Whether you're in the military, whether you're in business, or wherever you're at in society, you are behind the lines. And you must act like someone who's been parachuted behind the lines. So obviously, in your case, I would say, well, it's not good to be drunk all the time. But on the other hand, there's other things that they should be thinking about. Don't pin up racial stuff on your locker, all that kind of stuff. I've helped a lot of Marines through that kind of stuff. We don't operate like we used to. The Marines talk to me all the time. They're really upset about things, many of them. And I said, just forget this meeting ever took place. You know the situation, you go back in, you bore in. If you have to, pretend you're on the other side. We have people who pretend to be max liberals. I think it was Taylor Caldwell once wrote a book called The Devil's Advocate, which people infiltrated the dictatorial government, and instead of just carrying out the government's policies, they pushed it more, they doubled up, which made their superiors very happy. But they pushed the people into a revolution, and they lost. I mean, the people won. So I have a son-in-law that one time, he was on an airplane, and he went back to the bathroom of the airplane, and he put up some swastika stickers, and came back to his seat. He's well-dressed, has a, you know, $1,000 suit on. And he starts screaming to the stewardess, "Stewardess, stewardess, there's a Nazi on this plane. I was just in the bathroom and it was full of swastikas." And he made such a big commotion about it, they gave him a first-class seat. Every place you go, too, we spread the, you know, the word, all kinds of little things. We just drop them everywhere, thousands of them. We call it Johnny Apple seeding, and it works. People write me from everywhere that have seen those little things. Anyhow, I don't recommend anybody go in the military unless they're going in there for a specific mission. And that's either to burrow into the military operation or gain the information we need to stay current with military techniques for the war that's going to be here, not over there. Any other questions?
I'd just like to say I agree with the whole argument that attitude we have about not attacking people on our side. I've talked to these liberal, I'm sorry, the conservative Republicans that are in the right of life movement, and they condemn the shooters of the doctors who commit abortions, you know. And I say, look, I don't agree with what they did, even though I think she could do. But I'll say, I don't agree with what they did, but I'm not going to condemn them for what they did.
Well, my position, which is the only one I'm truly qualified to give, is that if that abortion doctor runs an abortion mill that's aborting mostly non-white babies, then I would be totally against his assassination. But if he is running an abortion mill that is aborting all white babies, then I would be all for his assassination.
I would say abortion babies being aborted all.
The problem you have is, go to any abortion movement demonstration and have a sign with you that says, "Save white babies," and see how long you last. Those people will turn on you as fast as the liberals and the Marxists. Or go to a pro-abortion rally and put up abort non-white. Decide, we take the position that there's nothing you're going to do if a woman really doesn't want to have a baby that bad, then you don't want her as a mother anyhow. And she's going to probably raise the kid as your bitter enemy anyhow. So I don't, it's not on religious grounds, I don't approach it on that. I believe that these women should be smart and carry the baby to term. People are crying for white babies. She'd make $25,000, $35,000, $40,000 by having that baby and selling the baby to white people who want babies. And then she can go to college and lift her lifestyle up the whole bit. That's my answer to that. But the non-whites, I think that we should have invested a long time ago in inner city abortion mills. That would be the greatest funding. We could get government grants to abort our opposition. We could sell stock. It'd be great. Any other questions? That's it. Thank you.
Put this on 2 or 3 broadcasts not long ago. Tom Metzger and Joe Reedy from Fallbrook. And they're going to be in with us on our citizens' meeting next Tuesday, May 1st. And that's at the American Legion Hall, 4061 Fairmount. And I thought maybe you fellows might have something to add. I've been telling them about this meeting. So would you like to put in your 2 cents worth and tell them what you expect it to be?
Well, we expect it to be a no-nonsense meeting, Faye.
Right.
We're tired of going to meetings, and eating and retreating and all that junk. It's time. The time for that is over. We want to discuss number one at this meeting, the Genocide Convention. We want to cover the Atlantic Union Resolution. which, as I hope that most of the people know now, has been defeated again, just barely defeated for another few months maybe till they bring it up again. And then we're going to discuss more than 50 gun control laws that are pending.
Well, you know, Tom, just because it was defeated this time, that doesn't make the men, the representatives, so-called, that voted for it any less guilty of violating their oath and betraying the people.
Very true. Or any less criminal, I
That's
call
right.
it.
That's right. Absolutely. Tom, what do you, or Joe, what have you got to say?
Well, I was sitting here thinking about listening to what you had to say, and I'll go back for a minute to this May the 1st meeting. I think it's appropriate at this point, since by coincidence we are meeting on the 1st of May, to mention Adam Weishaupt, founder of the Illuminati,
mm-hmm.
a man who set up a secret order to destroy all existing religion, government, and order. And his end product was to be nihilism and chaos.
Mm-hmm.
The symbol of that order may be seen on our federal, on it, not mine, but a Federal Reserve note, mistakenly called $1. The pyramid and the all-seeing eye is
right
there, and the date and Roman numerals at the base of the pyramid is simply 1776, which is not the year that our nation was founded, as some people suppose.
That's right.
Is not what it stands for. It stands for the founding of the Illuminati. And the Latin inscription are all symbols of this Luciferian organization. But at this meeting, we hope to arouse enough interest on the part of the citizens where they will get up and start taking part in their government. You know, we've sat back, and everybody from Kissinger down to the janitor in the White House is running our government into the ground, I might add. And we're sitting back and saying, ain't it terrible? Well, this is our government. It's not a bunch of people we send to Washington. It belongs to the people. The Constitution was written by the people and ordained by the people. And
absolutely right.
I think it also, Joe, we might say that we have, like I said before, to get tough on this issue, and we're not just going to have meetings to discuss and discuss and
just
discuss.
Talk to each other.
I mean, there's a lot of groups been doing that for years, and you see where we're at. And I would go so far as to say the only hope is to combine the strategy of politics with the tactics of resistance warfare in this country.
Yeah.
This is war. We're living, as far as I'm concerned, under criminal government.
We certainly are.
Men who are perverting our government. Abraham Lincoln said many years ago that it is our duty to remove the men who pervert the Constitution from office.
Here's something else he said, Tom. Excuse me.
That's all right.
He said, a single instance in which a plainly written provision of the Constitution has been denied might, in a moral point of view, justify a revolution. Certainly it would if such a right were a vital one. And certainly these things that these people in Washington and California legislature are attempting to pass, such as the Genocide Convention and this Atlantic Union Charter, are tremendously vital to the lives of every American. They are in complete violation of our Constitution. In fact, they tear the Constitution to shreds. They tramp it in the mud. And these people sit up there and draw pay. We bleed for taxes to pay their wages
right
while they send us down the river.
And they take the tax money and turn it right around on us, and that's what they're using to oppress us. And if you think the oppression is getting bad now, just wait a little
just
while.
A few months.
It's going to get tougher. I'd rather go on my feet than on my knees myself.
Depends on how you be on your knees.
That's right. That's true. The lifeblood of dictatorship is the money. And that's why I want to talk about taxes, too, and a tax strike a little bit maybe at this meeting, because that's an antidote. A lot of people shy away from it because we haven't gotten used to really fighting in this country yet. But there are people all over this country that have just said, no, they're not going to pay. Why go out and pay for a hired killer to get you, to destroy you? And taxation without representation, do we have any representation in this country?
You don't even have it in the courts anymore because the judges have taken over the juries. I've seen instances, and I can relate instances to you, where the judges have actually stacked the juries. That's what they're doing. The juries must belong to the people. They do not belong to the government. That's not only the facts of a case. They are to judge whether a law is just and moral. This is a primary responsibility of the jury, and it has been taken away from the juries by the judges who sit there and dictate the law, dictate the evidence, dictate every part. It's a directed verdict, and the jury just sits there and rubber stamps it and goes through the motion because our Constitution says we'll have a trial by jury. They've corrupted and prostituted the whole process.
You know, in the church I belong to, there came a slogan out about a year ago, and it was no doctrines and no doctrine, no dollars. And that's exactly what we ought to do. No representation, no dollars.
That's what the First Revolutionary War was all about.
Well, I was just going to say, isn't that what the First Revolution was about? Now, we're not advocating a revolution.
Counter-revolution is what we advocate.
The revolution has been here and gone, and we lost the revolution.
Well, of course, Mr. Nixon has his new revolution, but what we're going to do now is avail ourselves of the things that have been provided. Then, of course, if that doesn't work, why, we don't know where it's going.
We hope to stay within the framework of the Constitution. We hope to return the country to the Constitution. We will work our hearts out, and we will sacrifice our lives to do that. If it is at all possible to be done, humanly possible, to break the power of the money on this country, to put the country back in the hands of the people, we will spend our efforts toward that end.
I think another good way of saying it is take the law in your own hands. And that's pick out the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and put it in your hand and use it.
Amen.
And don't let any bureaucrat trample on your rights, but you're going to have to do it right in your front yard, right in your own house, right in your own business.
Right in your own county.
And it may be a small little thing, but stand pat and don't let them budge you. This is resistance, and resistance works.
You see, Tom and Joe, all of our officials today, they're going along with the top echelon, our county supervisors and our city, and we're being regionalized into socialism. It's law by law, region by region, and executive order by executive order.
Exactly
right.
It's a whole barrel of snakes. But getting onto that jury once more, I heard at a meeting here about 3 weeks ago, someone tell a group of people that there would be 30 more indictments handed out on a matter of taxes in the Southern California area. When the speaker was challenged on this statement, the remark was made, our law firm makes it a business to know about these things. In other words, the jury is a rubber stamp. The grand jury, the federal grand jury, hands down an indictment at the request of the IRS, and that is certainly a complete reversal of what the jury was set up to do.
I believe at the time that this statement was made, you told me that the grand jury had not even convened as yet.
That's right. Now they can predict. People in the know can predict what the grand jury is going to decide before they even convene on the case.
You know, one thing that, going back to that Constitution, Joe, you remember that the Constitution of the United States was a contract binding government, not binding the citizens.
Exactly.
It was to bind government, and there was a Bill of Rights to very carefully define that contract, and there was an enforcement clause added into those Bill of Rights called the right to keep and bear arms. Don't let any legislator like Mr. Knox infringe on the right to keep and bear arms by meddling with some of these gun laws, or all of them, in any way to take your arms, because the way things are going, you may need them.
That's right. Your First Amendment, excuse me.
Well, there's already a federal law on the books that was passed long about 1936-37 that has all the need that for any kind of control, the bazooka and the sawed-off
sure.
and machine gun and that sort of thing. That's the only law we need.
Even that's
right.
an infringement. We do not have to be regulated by Big Brother. We have the capabilities of regulating ourselves on the local level, and there's no need for the government to come poking down around our business, telling us how we can do this, how we can do that. We don't need it.
No, but they're sure trying.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. These politicians, they've really got no guts and a lot of gall. And if you back them down, they'll back down, but you got to get tough with them. And there's a lot of people around the country like Jim Scott and A.J. Porth and some of the fellows, Mr. Freed from Michigan, and all these fellows, they're putting them right down where they belong. And if you really get on them, most of these politicians are pragmatists. And they're just like a bunch of rats on a ship. And when things look like they might lose, they're going to be leaving just like that. They're going to be jumping off.
Well, I believe that if anything's to be done, it's got to be done by the people. Now, we've been fighting brush fires when the fire that is destroying is in Washington. It's in the Congress, it's in the White House. And unless we can make those people adhere to the Constitution and that which they swear to do, or get them out.
That's right.
We've got to do it.
A very good instance of how the papers and the media have smoke screens everything is in today's San Diego Union, the editorial, the top editorial about the new Atlantic proposal.
You've got 2 minutes now, Joe. Get wound up.
I won't go too far. I'll simply tell you, I'll read you one paragraph here that says, it's talking about the need for a new Atlantic Union type setup. What they're actually talking about is this thing that was just voted out, but they're coming back strong to get it in there again. Occasionally, however, the brass section comes on loudly. The Soviet Union, for example, has not relaxed its grip on the millions of free people that it subjugated in World War II period. Moscow has more troops in Eastern Europe today than it had a decade ago. It has streamlined its military organization into a youthful corps geared to an offensive strategy. It has more missiles than the West, and its domestic propaganda is staunchly anti-American and anti-NATO,
and
we're just shipping wheat to them as fast as we can load ships.
And you know why they have more missiles and more armament and more...
Yes.
Is because we have supported them. The communist system in any place would fall flat on its face unless it is supported by the outside, and
right.
We have supported Moscow or the Russian and every communist country.
Well,
and now they're going to start doing it to Red China.
Right. A friend of mine is a merchant mariner, and he goes over to Europe there on his ship, and he sees a NATO ship sitting right there, and the Russian tankers pumping oil and so forth right into them. We're buying the oil from Russia over there.
Right, right. And we've got about 30 seconds maybe, and that'll leave me 30 seconds to close.
Well, remember one thing, $22 billion of your sweat and blood are paid to these private bankers each year for interest on money
right.
They create out of nothing.
And they tell us we just owe it to ourselves.
That's right.
Thanks, boys, for coming down. We believe there are many beside Joe and Tom who feel that now is the time to take action against the officials who have sold out the people. We have talked and complained. Now let us see if the grand juries and courts are as corrupt as the many disloyal state and national officials are. This is what our citizens' meeting is about. May 1st at the American Legion Hall at 4061 Fairmount Avenue, San Diego at 7:30 p.m. Come and find out. Come and help us. Bay Bryce, Post Office Box 1073, National City, California, 92050. Goodbye, and may God give us wisdom and courage.